Okay, welcome back. 2 hours coming up with Jeff and Erica for you. A lot of information we thought we'd put out there. We had an extra hour tonight, so we are here and you are there, and we ask you just to open your mind and take this in and think about it however you will. Dr. James Giordano, neuroscientist. The title of the video is The Battlefield of the Brain, and that really does sum up an awful lot of what's going on now. The human brain is target number one for them. And they have come up with technology that is probably 20 or even 30 years, depending upon the application we're talking about, further down the road than most people would ever imagine. I think that when you start reading stories, as we have read, that they can install memories in your brain that you never had, experiences. Or they can remove memories of experiences you did have from your brain. We know now that the bioweapon injections can literally destroy someone's lifetime personality, patterns, habits, profile, right? People are not the same. They're changing. Their personalities have been ruined. And I suspect it has more to do with this shot than people would ever imagine. There are things involved that have to be bioelectrical, they're chemical in the brain, they're neurological. People are being described as being nasty, rude, arrogant, angry, etc. And they've never been that way before. What happened? They got shot up. So, Erica, we have a whole new category, a paradigm. It's been around, we've been reporting on it, but it seems to be, certainly, if it's not exploding, it's gaining an awful lot of momentum. And that is the reports coming in of personality changes in people. Loved ones, spouses, children, it doesn't matter. Something's going on, whether it be electrical, chemical, or bioelectrical, chemical. I don't know. Something's up. Welcome back. Glad you're here.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be back. We made it through another week.
Yeah, we
almost.
Yeah, well, we're going to make it. And okay, enough said. All right, what do we try to tell people about the sanctity of the human mind? We're going to get into Dr. James Giordano here in a few minutes, but we no longer, honestly, have a reasonable sense of surety to assume that what comes out of our mouths and what is resident in our mind in terms of memory, analyses, you name it, as being real. We don't know. We're beyond that stage. They have the whole damn cell phone grid set up now, and other electromagnetic sources and platforms to control human minds. It's not a problem. How do you see it?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think the dopamine pathway has been exploited to the max, and that would be, you know, the neurotransmitter that's responsible for reward. And you can easily become addicted to that. And by doing so, you can influence somebody's behavior. I mean, we are hardwired to seek reward, stimulus for and reward, and they know that is a primal driver in human behavior. So if you can exploit that, and the cell phone is very addictive in doing that. Every time the thing pings, you look at it.
May I add something?
Kind of a reward.
Yeah. May I add something? What they have done to our young people, on the basis of what you're saying, and you are 1,000% correct, is to take away the whole idea of working and being acknowledged or being given a reward for academic pursuits, for whatever, doesn't matter. Young people now, no child left behind, do not have to worry about studying. Kids deliberately are ruining their grades now so they won't be mocked by their peers and contemporaries. This is not a joke. I first read this three, four years ago in England. There was a major study, and they found out that a hell of a lot of students were sabotaging their own academic performance so they could be in the in crowd, fit in.
Yeah, I heard that
peers.
Too.
Sickening. Mm-hmm. So please go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, so... Well, and then that's the other aspect to it. You know, we're social creatures. We like to belong. I mean, we're hardwired to live in small groups for that cooperative benefit. So that plays into it, too, you know, in terms of influencing people's behavior. And, I mean, the whole concept of peer pressure is a part of that. And it takes a person, I think, of strong will to resist that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And stronger will than ever is needed in so many ways now. And yet people are being disassembled. They're just not able to function anymore on the basis that I remember in school. You know, everybody would at least make a reasonable effort to do their homework. Most everybody. And if they got a good grade, they were reasonably proud of it, as they should be. Not anymore. Not anymore. You don't have, in fact, giving grades is considered not only racist, but severely psychologically damaging to children. Oh, here's little Miss Molly or whomever, and she's trying hard, and she gets an A on a paper, and all of her friends turn on her. So is Molly going to try as hard next time to get an A on that paper? I don't think so. We're seeing this. It's a fact.
Well, yeah, and this is how they've bred, you know, mediocrity into the population now. You know, there's no benefit for achievement, and if anything, it's discouraged. So now it's a population that is content to underachieve, be less than what they can be, and still make it.
There is no incentive anymore in the traditional sense of things. Now, you homeschoolers, that's a different story. But when they start handing out school board dictates that no child is to be given a failing grade because it'll damage them, and they actually pretend to think that the children are going to not take advantage of that, how stupid are these people? No. It's organized infiltration of communist values. That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they started talking about, was this 20 years ago? The participation award that you just show up and you get a prize. You don't have to do anything or perform or achieve. You just show up.
Showing up is showing up is worth an A. You're damn right. You're there. You're participating. You've put yourself in it. Oh, well, how do you even begin to think about reversing something like this?
No, really? It's inbred now for a couple of generations.
Yeah, and in a couple of generations, we'll have the Borg.
Right.
Norm, the new normal, that'll be the Borg. And we're going to see it happening all too fast. Wow. Not good. And that doesn't mean we quit, but we have to first understand the enemy. Know your enemy. Nothing more true has ever been spoken. Know your enemy. And the other side of that coin is, well, we have met the enemy, and the enemy is us. We're victimized by our own abilities to be conned and deceived. But now they're going beyond that, as we're going to hear a little bit of in this video by James Giordano. They're using EMF, and don't say, oh, 5G. No, it's much more than that. It's a whole program. Look at Charlotte Iserbeet's brilliant book if you want to see the roots of the destruction of the human mind of our young people, the deliberate dumbing down of America. I don't think the adults were much of a problem. They were just pushed over with porn, right? Escapism. Mm-hmm. Poison food, toxic food, no problem. Threats. We're just not what we were. Because I remember as a kid, and I'm sure you do too, people had substance. Even if it was lousy substance, they had substance.
Yeah.
There was something there. Now we're seeing zombies. We literally are seeing walking, glazed-eyed zombies. Not all the time, not everywhere, but they're beginning to become more observable. You can see them if you look. And, wow, I don't know what to say. It's not a good situation. I don't think I'll just kind of leave it at that. Anything you want to add, please do.
Yeah, it's as if the culture's been homogenized. You know, just everybody's...
Anesthetized. Yes.
You know, and when there's nothing to strive for, why try at all?
That's precisely the point I was trying to make. If schools, in their final lust of communist indoctrination, take away the idea of an earned response and reward, what is there in life? See, the kids extrapolate this to everything. It doesn't just stay in the classroom. It becomes who they are.
Well, and they get addicted to immediate gratification, not having discipline themselves for any reason. It's just, it's a free-for-all. Anything goes.
If I
want it, I should have it.
That's exactly right. I told this story the other day. I don't know if I told it Wednesday, but I was watching, I was in a store, like a Rite Aid store, and there was a woman waiting at a line, and it was about a five-minute wait. She had two kids. One of them was a boy. These are 14, 15-year-olds, and the other one, I assume, was a girl, but I'm not sure. It looked like a girl, but it could have been a tranny. But the boy kept going out among the store shelves and aisles and picking up, the first thing he brought back was a big package of Oreo cookies. Now, I watched and she said, put it back. And I wanted to congratulate her. Good job, Mom. Good. And then the daughter came along with a package of Fig Newtons. For some reason, the mother said okay to the Fig Newtons, assuming maybe that she was thinking they were, a little more healthy. And the kid kept coming back with two or three other things. She said, no, put them back. And my joke was, Mom, if he can pronounce accurately the names of all the ingredients and poisons on the list of ingredients, let him have them. He'll never do it. But these kids, they see a brand name. They don't think beyond the brand name or the taste that they think they're going to get. That's their big reward now. These are like lab rats. You give them something that tastes good, and they respond again and again.
Right.
This is pure hedonistic taste reflex. That's all he was into, this kid. And that's not uncommon. It's just the way things are now, and what a tragic way indeed things have gotten. Okay. Anything you want to add to that dissertation of, I don't know.
No, it's frightening. It's the devolvement, I guess, of the human species is, I don't know. You know, on the other hand, though, you have some super high achievers, at least, when it comes to athletics and maybe to some degree in academics, but it's certainly the exception. The vast majority are... Yeah, go ahead.
Putting that round rubber ball through that little round steel hoop?
No, I wouldn't say, entertainment sports, but no, true athletic endeavors. You see some...
I gotcha. Okay.
People climbing difficult mountains in record times, what used to take 2 days to do, some people can do it in half a day.
Right.
So I don't know what, how do you account for that? Well, the rest of the population is just mired in I don't know, degenerative disease and is falling apart by the time
staring.
They're 20.
They're staring and drooling and reacting.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's stimulus reaction. It's no longer proaction reward. It's reaction.
And yes, Yes.
Your reward then, whatever it is.
It's just like a bacteria living in a petri dish.
Right. Right. All right. Tell us about Dr. James McDonald. Giordano.
Giordano. I don't know too much about him. He is a neuroscientist. He's done several lectures at Livermore Labs. And I guess it was about 2 years ago, picked up on this one that he had done in August of 2017. And it seemed that the clip that we're going to play is eerily similar to a scenario that's playing out right now on how to crash a society through social engineering and various other forms of, mental and emotional manipulation. And also introducing things that would not necessarily kill people, but make them severely sick, so that they would be less apt to resist what's being foisted on them.
Comments are always interesting with good material. Not always interesting, but mostly. Great content needs more media exposure. Well, we'll give it some right now. This is Dr. James Giordano. And this is a portion of a 1 hour and 10 minute, we're not going to play much of it, but we'll play some, speech that he gave in 2017. Here we go. This should be interesting. I'm looking forward to this.
Range, but to go beyond that now, it's something called exceptional modification. No sci-fi here, folks. Only facts. Then we get into the real form of a weapon. When we're talking about a real form of a weapon, remember, this is a means of contending against another in each and all of these dimensions. Assess and predict their escalations to violence so that we may be able to intervene, perhaps mitigate those. Mitigate said aggression directly or indirectly. Incur certain burdens of morbidity that makes them less likely to engage in combative or violent activity. And in some cases, induce mortality. These are all viable operational definitions of a weapon, and can neuroscience and technology be employed for these? Each and all. One of the areas where we're looking to refine the capabilities of neuroscience and technology is something referred to as non-lethal or less lethal weapons. And while one might think that the ethical argument strongly supports these direction, here too, there is in fact a strong discourse that pushes back against any potential military warfare applications of the brain sciences that I think you need to understand. The reason I bring that up is that this can do two things. Number one, it creates a posture where the neurosciences cannot and should not ever be used for these types of operations. Please understand, my feeling on that is, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? If we could in fact look ourselves in our eye as humanity and say we shall never employ science and technology for those means that may be destructive against others, irrespective of whether or not those individuals are aligned with our ideology and our beliefs.
See, he's talking about a barrier, a firewall, beyond which we should not go as a sentient species. But name one restraint that we know about, and we don't know about a heck of a lot of things going on in the black ops world, that we have made a decision not to pursue or investigate or try to develop as a weapon system or paradigm. Name one that we haven't. I can't. If we don't know what they're doing, but I'll tell you right now, there are no limits in my view on what they are doing. How much money do they have? As much as they want. This is really evil stuff. Okay, here we go.
Yes, that would be. The reality of the situation poses itself as something quite differently, however. And the problem we need to face is that certain prohibitions, if not frank proscriptions against using brain science in these potential ways, even defensively, may create an opportunistic window for others to be able to then pursue these approaches more vigilantly and more aggressively. It's a balancing act, folks. I'm not going to necessarily tell you how to resolve it because I don't know, and it becomes difficult. There are certain things we can do on the research side of the house to dial back who does the research, what type of research is done, and what it's used for. But this is a cat that's already out of the bag, and as I hope to demonstrate to you in a moment, this is being conducted on an international scale, and so it may be a little late to start thinking about we're never going to use it like this and what happens if we do or we don't. What types of kind of neuroweapons can we engage and develop? Well, I provide them for you. I don't want to go down into specific granularity as each one of them do because I don't want to give you bad dreams.
And you're not. Hey, now listen to this carefully, and I'll go back over it if we need to. He's talking about things that could very easily be part and parcel of the over 40 BSL weapons labs that the U.S. built and supports in Ukraine and other places.
Mm-hmm.
These weapons labs are geared toward pharmaceuticals and microbiological events, including especially the brain. And we don't have to go too far down the road to pull in the bioweapon and tie that right up to prion generation in
mm-hmm.
the brain, and you're out of here. You're gone. So that's one short way out. There are more agonizing ways out, I'm sure. All right, let's go back.
Blame me if you wake up in a cold sweat screaming in the middle of the night. But this is what we can do with these things. Again, let's think here about drugs and bugs. If we're looking at drugs, we're looking at what we call in-close pharmaceuticals. These are not weapons of mass destruction. These are weapons of mass disruption. What they can be used to do is create particular yet highly selective effects in individuals so that they can be delivered at very, very low doses, yet deliver a high amplification effect that's called a hormetic potential, to be able to alter cognitions, emotions, and behaviors. How do you do that? Well, you can work on key operatives. In other words, this individual who's sitting before me may be a diplomat. They are now coming to interact with me. They may have a posture that does not necessarily align with mine. Can I alter their cognition? Can I alter their affiliation? Can I alter their emotionality? And in such a way, might I be able to alter their behavior? Yeah, I can. And if, in fact, this individual possesses political or charismatic capability, charm, charisma, leadership potential, to then stand before their people and say, this guy's my best buddy now. They might go, well, I'm following this guy. Or they might think he's stark raving mad and I've created social disruption within his political ranks. I can do that on a variety of levels, from individuals who are head of a small family or group, to the tribal, to the community, to the large-scale population. So we can utilize these things to be able to affect key operators and dynamic individuals who may charismatically, politically, or through other means of power be able to affect groups. It's a ripple effect. It is a ripple effect. Moreover, we can induce a number of neuromicrobiological agents to then incur something called high morbidity. These are not necessarily mortal agents. We can modify the existing palette of bacteria and viruses through the use of gene editing techniques. Very viable. This has been some of my ongoing work with my colleague Diane DeUlis at National Defense University.
Gee whiz, Erica, I guess he hasn't heard yet. Well, never mind. All right. And if you didn't get it, I'm talking about his use of the word viruses. The big deep state disinformation effort now to upset science as the average person, the lay man or lay woman. That didn't sound right, did it? All right, anyway, the average person understands science to be pretty rudimentary. Bacteria, viruses, mold, yeast, fungus, disease states, etc. Well, we've got this whole viral denying movement now, and more people are stepping into the goo and getting stuck in that. And it's nice to see a man speaking straight about viruses and bacteria.
And what we can also do is recognize that there are existing microbiologicals that can be harnessed to then induce the effects. We can also engage certain chemicals that way. What we want here is a morbidity factor, not necessarily a mortality factor. I want to make people sick. And what I do here is the virus is not necessarily the bug. The virus is what I put over the internet. Let me show you how I can crash a system pretty easily. I affect key individuals here, here, and here. And then I take another community in the back of the room. I affect key individuals there. And then I take another community. I affect key individuals there. And then I do what every good attributional group does. I beat my chest and take credit for it. And what I put out over the internet is, this is a virus, a bacteria, an agent that I have infiltrated into your fill-in-the-blank. I say it's a weapon of mass destruction. And what I tell you it's going to do is it's going to produce paranoia, anxiety, and sleeplessness. What I've just done is I've recruited every paranoid hypochondriac to think that they have whatever that is. I've used salient and sentinel cases, and I create essentially a legion of what's known as the worried well. They now flood emergency rooms. They flood their clinicians. The CDC responds back and says, no, 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 there is no such a thing. And I've created a schism of trust between the population and the polis. It's both a short and a long war's effect. Moreover, I can create particular neuromicrobiologicals that may have a much longer duration of action. For example, modified Zika virus. And what I can then do is, as a consequence of that, is I can affect subsequent generations to incur a public health morbidity and mortality effect that then creates an increased economic and perhaps social burden.
He's talking about Zika virus, is what he was saying. Does any of this sound familiar, dear friends, in terms of the Pfizer-Moderna death paradigm injection? We're seeing almost exactly what he's saying. We're not necessarily seeing death in a week or two or 10 or 20, but we are seeing morbidity. And by morbidity, I'm going to include injury, physical and psychological injury. Our society has been beaten to a bloody pulp, and it will have PTSD for the rest of its days. And I think that's part of what he's after here. I'm going to back it up just a drop here.
Where I can create particular neuromicrobiologicals that may have a much longer duration of action, for example, modified Zika virus. And what I can then do is, as a consequence of that, is I can affect subsequent generations to incur a public health morbidity and mortality effect that then creates an increased economic and perhaps social burden. Long war scenario. If I wanted to do something that's a little bit more proximate, I can utilize nanoparticulate matter. That we can utilize nanoscience to create much better drugs, to get them where they got to go in the brain. I can create nanoscience and nanotechnology to be able to escort certain drugs across the proliferant barrier, which is the blood-brain barrier and cerebrospinal fluid barrier. So I get these things where they got to go. But I can also utilize nanoparticulate matter in a very indiscriminate way. The idea here is that I can get something called high CNS aggregation material that is essentially invisible to the naked eye and even to most scanners because it is so small that it selectively goes through most levels of filter porosity. These are then inhaled either through the nasal mucosa or absorbed through the oral mucosa. They have high CNS affinity. They clump in the brain or in the vasculature, and they create essentially what looks like a hemorrhagic diathesis, in other words, a hemorrhage predisposition or a clot predisposition in the brain. What I've done is I've created a stroking agent. And it's very, very difficult to gain attribution to do that.
Okay, partner. Pretty important stuff.
Yeah. A lot of similarities. A lot of parallels.
What he's saying should open doors for those of you who are researching this or trying to make your own way through. This is 5 years ago. And this is what was released.
Yeah.
This is not the black ops stuff that is hidden. Okay? So usually when they say could do, may do, it usually means have done. Okay?
Right.
Is that on a variety of levels, from the individual to the group, highly disruptive. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been entertained and examined to some extent by my colleagues in NATO. And to those who are working on the use of neurobiological sciences to create populational disruption. Very, very worried about the potential for these nanoparticulate agents to be CNS aggregating agents to cause neural disruption.
I got to hear that again. That was important.
Then I get to the area of devices. And this, in many ways, is going to be less than definitive. The reason for this is highly evolving and I think is limited only in certain cases by context of imagination. What are the devices? Well, I have them here for you here. You have neurosensory mobilizing agents. And
let me do this. I didn't get my rewind done right. I got to go back a little bit further. There, that should do it. Now, the one thing I'm hearing here is we're hearing the term nano. Every one of these so-called media doctor, expert, scientist, frauds, con artists who are out there occupying the internet are fashioning themselves to be nanotechnology or nanochemical scientists of some stature and some accomplishment. None of them have studied nanotech. None of them could even define it accurately, I think, if they were caught in a moment where they didn't have their teleprompter or script. Nano is not a joke. This is an incredibly difficult field. And you understand it. Go ahead.
Yes, I do. I can tell by, you know, the way they speak. They don't know what it is. you know, and to be making assumptions about what's in these vials and how it's working. That they don't
Non-stop.
Know. It's clear to
Non-stop.
Me that they do not know. Yeah,
no.
and I guess the latest thing is that there's nothing in the vials except metals, graphene, and parasites.
And heavy metals. Yeah. It's so really disgusting. It's hard to laugh at it anymore because
the sheep
are eating this up. They just don't get it. And all of a sudden, here's a doctor or someone with a medical background who fashions him or herself and promotes him or herself to be an expert in the field of nanotech. It doesn't happen when you read a couple of articles. It takes years of research and study. These people are frauds. They are con artists. And all they want to do is talk about, a lot of them, you got to get your pH straightened out, and there's that interstitial ocean of fluid in your body. We got to get that balanced, and you'll be fine. No, that's not how it works. And
no,
the poor people who...
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead. No, it's laughable.
Yeah.
I'm at a loss for words, but...
The poor people who stare at this and actually think that the person uttering this stuff knows what they're doing simply because they're uttering it, and make no mistake, a lot of them are uttering it off a teleprompter written for them. Because the big new game is now there are no such thing as viruses, and it's all graphene oxide. Don't worry, be happy. Or it's glyphosate interacting with graphene oxide. That there's no spike protein to worry about. Don't give it a second thought. Well, wrong.
Yeah, reality says something different, but go ahead.
Back to James Giordano.
Then creates an increased economic and perhaps social burden. Long war scenario. If I wanted to do something that's a little bit more proximate, I can utilize nanoparticulate matter. Now, we can utilize nanoscience to create much better drugs, to get them where they got to go in the brain. I can create nanoscience and nanotechnology to be able to escort certain drugs across the proliferant barrier, which is the blood-brain barrier and cerebrospinal fluid barrier. So I get these things where they got to go. But I can also utilize nanoparticulate matter in a very indiscriminate way. The idea here is that I can get something called high CNS aggregation material that is essentially invisible to the naked eye and even to most scanners because it is so small that it selectively goes through most levels of filtered porosity. These are then inhaled either through the nasal mucosa or absorbed through the oral mucosa. They have high CNS affinity. They clump in the brain or in the vasculature, and they create essentially what looks like a hemorrhagic diathesis, in other words, a hemorrhage predisposition or a clot predisposition in the brain. What I've done is I've created a stroking agent. And it's very, very difficult to gain attribution to do that. I can use that on a variety of levels, from the individual to the group, highly disruptive. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been entertained and examined to some extent by my colleagues in NATO and to those who are working on the worst use of neurobiological sciences to create populational disruption. Very, very worried about the potential for these nanoparticulate agents to be CNS aggregating agents to cause neural disruption, either as hemorrhagic and vascular disruptors or as actual neural network disruptors because they interfere with the network properties of various neural nodes and systems within the brain. Then I get to the area of devices. And this, in many ways, is going to be less than definitive. The reason for this is highly evolving and I think is limited only in certain cases by context of imagination. What are the devices? Well, I have them here for you here. They have neurosensory mobilizing agents, and to some extent, some of these have already been used.
Did you hear what he said? He said this field he's describing, in some cases, is only limited by your imagination. What does that tell you? What he's saying here is, we have the tech to do anything you can imagine.
Well, remember, that was Obama's brain initiative.
That's
they
true.
Put a lot of money into mapping the brain.
All right, here we go.
Disruptive. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been entertained and examined to some extent by my colleagues in NATO and to those who are working on the use of neurobiological sciences to create populational disruption. Very, very worried about the potential for these nanoparticulate agents to be CNS aggregating agents to cause neural disruption, either as hemorrhagic and vascular disruptors or as actual neural network disruptors, because they interfere with the network properties of various neural nodes and systems within the brain. Then I get to the area of devices. And this, in many ways, is going to be less than definitive. The reason for this is highly evolving and I think is limited only in certain cases by context of imagination. What are the devices? Well, I have them here for you here. They have neurosensory mobilizing agents. And to some extent, some of these have already been used. Things like high-output sensory stimulators that can be administered from unmanned vehicles, drones, insect-borne, or larger-scale, macro-scale vehicles such as tanks, cars, etc. These are sensory mobilizing agents that use high electromagnetic pulse energy that may also utilize high levels of sound, high levels of light energy, and they disrupt neurological sensory function. Already being used, now they're being developed with higher specificity. The idea of intracranial pulse stimulators take this one step further. Now the idea is to utilize direct electromagnetic pulses to be able to disrupt neural network aggregation. There have been some animal studies that have been done that look at the viability of electromagnetic pulses across various distances to essentially disrupt the network properties of the brain and create confusional models. So these are both individual and group disruptors.
That's 5 years ago. You think they've made any progress in that field, ladies and gentlemen? Yes. A lot. And he is...
No doubt.
He listened very carefully. You can find this clip. It's in Guests. It's under our names. And you can listen to it again if you're so inclined. We'll play a little more here. But trans and intracranial pulse stimulators. All right. Some people right away say, oh, 5G. Where's the proof? Maybe. Prove it. Where's your proof? You can't just speculate and throw things out there. You know what happens? The rank and file pick it up and run with it. And they don't question anything. It's 5G. No, it's graphene oxide this week. And they've got UAVs. They've got handheld devices. They've got drones. They've got insect-borne. Okay? This is not a joke. This is where they are. And, oh, this is... behind where they are.
Yeah.
You also have the idea of the altered reality tactics that is primarily used in irregular warfare. And here, once again, when we understand the construct of the way neural networks operate, they operate by key controller and influencing nodes that interact with other neural networks within the brain.
Erica, describe a neural network for people so they understand what it is.
These are these pathways in the brain that through which electrical stimulus flows and you get a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's how you process stimuli.
Remember, we're electrical first and chemical second. That's the secret.
Yep. And if there's things interfering with that, you know, you're going to have problems with cognition. Emotional stability, motivation.
Zombieism will take right over.
It can. You know, when there's imbalances in the levels of neurotransmitters, or they're just not flowing, or they're not at levels where they should be.
Okay. Let me go back just a little. It's good to loop these things and hear them a second time. It's tough. It's tough. This is tough stuff. To hang on to for a seriously long period of time. Here.
These are then inhaled either through the nasal mucosa or absorbed through the oral mucosa. They have high CNS affinity. They clump in the brain or in the vasculature, and they create essentially what looks like a hemorrhagic diathesis, in other words, a hemorrhage predisposition or a clot predisposition in the brain. What I've done is I've created a stroking agent, and it's very, very difficult to gain attribution to do that. I can use that on a variety of levels, from the individual to the group, highly disruptive. And in fact, this is one of the things that has been entertained and examined to some extent by my colleagues in NATO and to those who are working on the use of neurobiological sciences to create populational...
NATO, Ukraine, 40 VSL level 2, level 3, and maybe other exotic levels of lab work, all funded by the American tax dollar. All right? These are weapons he's talking about, not things to make people better people or happier people or to clean this planet up. I'm not saying this man's evil or anything of the sort. I'm just saying he is commenting on weapons development. It always goes military first, no matter what it is.
Very, very worried about the potential for these nanoparticulate agents to be CNS aggregating agents to cause neural disruption, either as hemorrhagic and vascular disruptors or as actual neural network disruptors, because they interfere with the network properties of various neural nodes and systems within the brain. Then I get to the area of devices. And this, in many ways, is going to be less than definitive. The reason for this is highly evolving and I think is limited only in certain cases by context of imagination. What are the devices? Well, I have them here for you here. You have neurosensory immobilizing agents. And to some extent, some of these have already been used. Things like high-output sensory stimulators that can be administered from unmanned vehicles, drones, insect-borne, or larger-scale, macro-scale vehicles such as tanks, cars, etc. These are sensory mobilizing agents that use high electromagnetic pulse energy that may also utilize high levels of sound, high levels of light energy, and they disrupt neurological sensory function. Already being used, now they're being developed with higher specificity. The idea of intracranial pulse stimulators take this one step further. Now the idea is to utilize direct electromagnetic pulses to be able to disrupt neural network aggregation. There have been some animal studies that have been done that look at the viability of electromagnetic pulses across various distances to essentially disrupt the network properties of the brain and create confusional models. So these are both individual and group disruptors. You also have the idea of the altered reality tactics that is primarily used in irregular warfare. And here, once again, when we understand the construct of the way neural networks operate, they operate by key controller and influencing nodes that interact with other neural networks within the brain electrochemically. If we can utilize transcranial mechanisms to be able to disrupt this, what we can do is we can create disrupted neural network aggregation and literally disrupt people's sense of time, space, and place. And there have been a number of experiments that have examined this, more in the medical context of looking at how we can try to control epilepsy. And we do recognize that these things are viable,
see,
although
they
have not yet been translated
it.
Directly into operations.
They always try to spin it
but they
into
have
something
been entertained
good.
For certain forms of special operations in irregular warfare. And so they're on the palette of possibility, although not near-term probability. If we go one step further, I think it becomes important for us to also understand that we can utilize devices slightly differently. This is the idea of the sort of non-human cyborg. And I don't use that word in any way colloquially. I mean it literally. A cybernetic organism that is an integration between a biological system and a technological system. The pioneering work in this field was done years ago. It was Delgado's work with deep brain stimulation in a bull. He utilized deep brain stimulating electrode coupled to a remote device, got into the bull arena, induced the bull to charge, pressed the button, and arrested the bull's forward motion. Stopped, poised right before him. See what I can do through the use of cybernetic interactive systems. Remotely controlled brain systems, brain interface. Could we now utilize that on different scales? Well, we're not talking about dropping electrodes into people's heads, despite what people will say. This is not a large-scale program to infiltrate the population with indwelling electrodes. With all due respect to Elon Musk, I think the actual translation of that into a broad-scale event within the population, as it very, very least speaks of the fantasy, if not fictional, and I think in many cases is very, very difficult to translate. Will key individuals get certain implants? Yes, I believe they will. Will key individuals also be able to get the benefits of translational neurosurgery that decrease some of the risks and burdens? Yes, they will. Will this be widely seen as a mechanism of individual and crowd control? No, it will not, at least not in the immediate future. But what has gone from the drawing board to the reality is this, the use of neural interfacing and physiological interfacing through the idea of remote-controlled small-scale systems to be able to modify the behavior of non-human animals on a variety of scales, small mammals, and increasingly the use of insects. The pioneering work was done by DARPA, something called the DARPA beetle or the DARPA fly. And more recently, an independent, non-DARPA-funded commercial enterprise, calls itself Dragonfly, has been able to utilize a combined set of techniques, both direct neural stimulation through the use of what we call macro technology and optogenetic control of key neuron firing patterns, to be able to direct the wing beats and pulses, and as a consequence, directionality of a dragonfly. And characteristically, an insect of about that big works quite well, because it can not only carry this particular payload, which is very, very light, and now does not have the burden of the prior DARPA beetle that needed a battery. This utilizes a solar rechargeable source, so it is infinitely powerful, but must also be able to bear the burden of now these very, very small scale, and in some cases they're looking to the high-level nano or at least low-level micro scale use of various electrodes that can then both record and perhaps deliver certain types of payloads as well. So the idea of now going back to these very, very low-dose nanopharmaceutical delivery of toxins or other chemicals and utilizing this as a controlled vector becomes a real possibility. Note, this has not been directly addressed, nor has it been entertained by any United States government entity in a public forum. This is not what DARPA has intended this device to be. This is supposed to be a surveillance device that could be used for public health and also to monitor key environmental factors. And the same is being touted here, that this is not a device that is weaponizable. The reason...
Sorry, Dr. Giordano, I humbly disagree. This is all advanced military weaponry technology, and these spin-offs he's talking about of a cute little DARPA beetle, the dragonfly that is actually a little machine. No. They are using this tech on humans. And they have had plenty of examples, I'm sure, that they could quote, but they never will. He's very carefully walking the other side of the street on this. These are weapon systems, is what he's talking about.
Well, and let's just say they were not, as of 2017, being deployed in the general population. They are now.
What is Pfizer and Moderna deployed on us?
Oh, right? That's a bioweapon.
mRNA, a deadly bioweapon. What are they doing next? They're going to mix their mRNA deadly bioweapon, the COVID shot, with a new monkeypox vax, which is also predicated on mRNA with the same spike protein in it. And the same combination will adhere to the new marketing, you watch, of FluVax. They're going to do the same thing. Get your COVID shot and your FluVax at the same time. They're building new vax components out of the same deadly paradigm. It's nothing new. And they're going to just double down and get two for one. No problem. So, yeah, this is all weaponry and science. All right, let's give Dr. Giordano a little bit more here, and then we got to say good night for this hour and come right back with another one.
Tell you about it is that this was a point of considerable debate and discourse at the recent meeting of the European Union Human Brain Project Subcommittee on Dual Use. And I stood before these people and said to them, you know, this is not being entertained in these ways. And the response there was, yes, but it should.
End of story. Yes, but it should. It should be weaponized and used in and on people. That's what he just said. That's what the special group, and I have a hunch that Uncle Klaus was there and his components and the others. They know what they're doing.
It'd be very interesting if that camera panned the audience to see who was in attendance, wouldn't it?
Oh, good point. Good point. Yeah. Harari, et cetera. Klaus in his Star Wars uniform, sitting in the back row.
And diligently taking notes.
No, the World Economic Forum is all over this stuff. Make no mistake about it. And we'll kind of wrap it up there. But you're encouraged and invited to go listen to this again. Think about it. And what he just said was absolutely essential. Let me see if I can back it up just a little here. Okay, here we go.
Environmental factors, and the same is being touted here, that this is not a device that is weaponizable. The reason I tell you about it is that this was a point of considerable debate and discourse at the recent meeting
Argument.
Of the European Union Human Brain Project Subcommittee on Dual Use. And I stood before these people and said to them, you know, this is not being entertained in these ways. And the response there was, yes, but it should.
Okay, there's the mindset, okay? That's what it is. It should be entertained in weaponization formats. And that's what they're doing. All right,
yep.
Friend, anything to say to that? That was really a good piece.
Well, the way the whole pandemic played out was almost a carbon copy of what he had illustrated. Just, you know, you use the media to set the tone and create the panic. You know, whether there was a genuine threat or not, people were made to believe there was a threat, and they acted accordingly. And now here we are.
Boy, did they act accordingly. They just ate it up and did exactly
they did.
What the supercomputer gaming model said that they would. And they got it. They got it wired. As Dr. Malone said, they've been gaming this for over 20 years.
Yep.
They know. All right, dear friends, we'll be right back with another hour. Hold on, and we will continue.